Well, as I mentioned during my reports from Singapore, where I attended the Shangri-La dialogue last month, parts of the island's political and diplomatic establishment really want Australians and Singaporeans to consider themselves family, much like the Australia-Kiwi relationship. Well, my producer, Kate McDonald, and I wanted to hear what it was like to be an expat these days, to be part of the Singapore family. Let me introduce you to two people who call Singapore home for now.
So what is it like to live in Singapore if you weren't born here? Now, there's a very big contingent. I think it's about 80,000 Australians live here as expats. Chris Edwards is joining me now. Thanks, Chris, for being with us. How long have you lived here?
10 years.
Why did you choose to come here?
Well, we moved up from Sydney. We bought a little terrace house in Redfern and we tried to do a renovation and we couldn't get approved through council what we wanted to do with the house. And at the time, my husband's company was opening an office here and they said, if you pay your own way, you can move to Singapore. And we kind of went, well, we don't know what to do with the house. Let's just go to Singapore. So it was kind of a spur of the moment, kind of, we were ready for an exit adventure.
So what, 3 children later, did you have all your children here?
Yes, all born here.
Do they go to the local schools?
No, I wish they could go to the local schools, but we're not permanent residents. We're here on an employment pass and we legally cannot go to the local schools, so they go to a British school here.
And how much does that cost, if you don't mind me asking?
It's not cheap. It's about $23,000 a year per child.
And how old are they now?
7, 5, and 2.5.
My goodness. So you're up for about 50,000 something for the two?
Yes, for the older two, yes.
With the prospect of another 25?
Yes.
Now, do you save money elsewhere by comparison with living in Australia?
Absolutely. And one of the reasons Singapore was attractive is the tax rate here is very
favourable.
Very favourable, yes. So I get concessions because I've got kids, but on my personal tax last year, I worked out to be about 2% on my income
2%?
Tax. 2%. Yep. Not that I earn a lot of money, so I don't pay myself a lot of money. So,
but would your husband pay?
I think he might have been maybe 4 or 5%.
Oh, like, my goodness, this is
low.
Really dramatically different. But then I suppose now you're facing these unbelievable education costs, which, of course, you wouldn't face in Australia. So it swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, exactly right. And we still love living here and we want to be here and we do see kind of exactly that what we pay in school fees we would probably be paying in tax in Australia.
Are you allowed to own property?
Yes, you can. They have made that a lot more difficult in the last 2 years, so they've changed the laws on foreign investment here. But if we were to apply to become permanent residents, then we would be allowed to own property here.
And are you thinking of doing that?
No, that's kind of not in our plan. We want to eventually move back home. So Singapore has been great for us, but we definitely want our kids to kind of grow up and I suppose
be Australian. When you say it's got a little bit more difficult, because we have read this, that things have changed a little bit for expats of late. What's that all about?
I think across Asia, I think not just in Singapore, but there was this thing called the expat package where you got paid a lot of money and your companies paid for school fees and it was kind of this very different life. But that hasn't been around really that much, I don't think, in the last 10 years. And I don't think they need expats as much as they did. I think Singapore's very much maturing and growing up and, you know, they've got a lot of local talent here and they don't need to kind of attract expats like they used to.
And do you feel in any way that you're less desired here? Like, is there any sense that you're not wanted?
I don't think that's a feeling. I mean, my company's very multicultural. We have a mix of locals, Indians, Filipino, Australians, Americans. So the circles in which I operate, it's very mixed and it's really lovely and diverse. So I don't get that sense.
So what's been good about it by comparison with Australia, I suppose?
Oh, gosh. Singapore has been fantastic for us. I started a business here and starting a business in Singapore has been very easy and the government has a lot of initiatives that help small businesses. So, for example, there's a productivity innovation scheme here where if whatever money I spent on training and technology, like buying laptops, the government would refund 60%. So little things like that really helped me when I was starting out.
Now, when I said I was coming to Singapore for this Shangri-La dialogue, quite a few people said, oh, Singapore, that authoritarian central. Is it like that now?
No, I don't think so at all. Singapore, for me, I feel like it's a joy to live in the city. Everything's clean and regulated. I love it. It's so easy. And, you know, you only have to drive across the border to Malaysia to see quite a contrast in how the countries are run. And I think Singaporeans have got a lot to be proud of. And I personally have absolutely loved our time here.
I gather getting a car, like there are all sorts of regulations, really, about the business of owning a car.
Yes, that's true. So cars are regulated here, and what they do is they make you buy a certificate of entitlement, which is known as a COE here because they love to abbreviate
and how
everything.
Much would that cost?
I bought mine 10 years ago, so it was great back then. I mean, I think we only paid $20,000 back then, but it's got to do with the age of your car and the number of cars on the road at the moment, and it's to try and reduce the number of cars on the road.
So before you even put your money down on the car,
yes.
You've actually got to pay this like a license fee.
Yes.
Because I had heard a very big figure, you know, up in the sort of 70 or 80,000, maybe they're for very big cars.
Yes, yes, and they do tax more the bigger your car, which, again, I just think it's very smart. I mean, cities need to rely on cars a lot less, so I think it's a great strategy. But yes, it is expensive to own cars. It's expensive to buy alcohol. It's expensive to send your kids to school. So you could argue someone my age with 3 kids should go home.
Well, can we expect you home anytime soon?
Now you're sounding like my mum. And the answer is, as it always is for an expat, maybe 2 more years.
Chris Edwards, thanks so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Well, another young Australian who's been living here for, I think, 4 years now, another expat, is Tim McDonald, who actually cut his teeth at the ABC and has now been living here and working here as a freelancer, working for the BBC quite a bit, aren't you?
Mostly BBC. I've done some other things, including for Australian networks.
What's it like living here?
Well, it's, you know, there's a lot of really good things about it. Everything works. There's so much opportunity. If you want to do something, especially business-wise, it's the perfect place. I mean, it's really, really business-friendly. The other great thing is, compared to Australia, it's 8 hours closer to the rest of the world. So if you want to go and explore Asia, you can do it on a weekend trip, which is great.
Do you, though? Is it a theory or an action?
Look, it helps to have a long weekend. But, yeah, you can. I mean, it's quite easy to duck over to Vietnam for a weekend, or up to Malaysia or Cambodia.
So do you think, it's a funny question because 4 years of your life have elapsed, but do you think you've changed as an Australian, or do you feel more part of the Asian region?
Well, Singapore's very much a cartilage between the East and the West in a way. It's this place that in a weird way helps one side explain itself to the other and vice versa. You know, it's always been this, in a weird way, kind of an almost a bit of a go-between. It's partly because it's an English-speaking place with a lot of Chinese speakers as well. It's always positioned itself as this outpost of business in Asia, and its leaders have been very global. You know, they're always in the middle of discussions between East and West, and I feel like they almost think of themselves as a bit of a conduit between the two.
What do you like about it? What don't you like about it?
What I like about it is, in a lot of ways, so many things seem possible here. There's so much in the way of work opportunities and travel opportunities. As for things I don't like, the constant expat grumble is, of course, the price of booze. But I also find that things tend to even out when it comes to costs. You know, I pay a lot less to the tax man and a lot more to the landlord. You pay more for booze, but less for transport. You know, unless you actually want to buy a car, in which case it's, you know, you're talking $80,000 plus. So things on that level tend to even out. The whole thing about the Singapore being the most expensive city in the world is a little bit overblown. You know, in fact, that survey is the Economist survey. They'll even admit to you that the real reason that it always wins every year is because of the cars. But you don't have to have a car here. That's the thing. I mean, public transport works. You can get around without it.
We have noticed, I must say, in trying to line things up, a real caution on behalf of the Chinese people, especially if they're civil servants or related to sort of the government departments. And I wonder whether that is an overhang of the... I don't know. I'm really asking you whether you think that there's a bit more of a sort of caution or
I think there's timidity. A certain amount of... Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of caution, but I think a lot of that is... part of that is cultural. There's a certain deference to authority here that you don't have in Australia. Here, I mean, there's a tendency to go, oh, well, I better ask the boss.
What are the classic myths of Singapore that you hear Australians say?
Well, there's an idea that it is just incredibly uptight. Look, sure, the rules are strict, but, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you don't notice a whole lot of difference. There are certain lines that you don't cross, you know, obviously drugs being the blaringly obvious one. then there's things like chewing gum. Chewing gum is technically illegal.
I have been told that on the net there's a lot of grumbling and whinging and sort of what you might call dissent
that
you certainly don't see in the Straits Times and you don't hear articulated. And a close watch is kept on that.
Well, you are allowed to complain about certain things and nobody will bother you. Indeed, I think it was Lee Kuan Yew, I remember his quote, I think, about Singaporeans, with that the Singaporean as a champion grumbler, I think was his quote, which I quite liked. And yeah, I mean, people will complain about the MRT or complain about, you know, prices of their favourite hawker stall going up. There are certain areas where you're much more likely to get in a bit of trouble. And there have been a number of people who have faced legal action from the Lee family.
So if they've tackled the issues around the Lee family.
Yeah, and it might not even be, you know, I mean, the allegations sometimes are, you know, in one case in particular, I know, you know, the allegation, there was not really any foundation
Scurrilous.
To it. Yeah, and you know, realistically, if the person had said it in Australia and a politician wanted to sue them, they probably would have lost in court. And the other area is race, race and religion. The discussion about race is very muted. They just tend to avoid the topic, which doesn't mean they haven't implemented some actually really smart policies about race relations. But, you know, I remember seeing something on TV a few weeks ago where there was an opposition member in Parliament who raised something about, I think it was headscarves in, I think it was the Civil Defence Force. And the response from the government is like, you know, you shouldn't be raising these issues. This is just bringing up trouble. And that's kind of the attitude. It's kind of racist and thing we dealt with in the 60s. And we've sorted it now. So there's no need to go and rehash it. And to do so is just going to
rattle a cage.
It's going to rattle a cage. But they have done these. It's not as if they haven't taken race into consideration at all. In fact, all of the public housing here, there's quotas about how many Chinese, Indian and Malay people can live in public housing. And the whole idea is that they don't want areas to turn into ghettos. And to that extent, it's actually worked. I mean, you don't walk around to too many places in Singapore and go, well, everyone here is Chinese. There's always a bit of a mix, and that's a really good thing. It's actually one of the things I like about, you know, my own neighbourhood. And everybody mostly gets along, and it's not really a problem. But it's just a really colourful mix.
So, are you going to stay, or are you going to go, or do you know, or what?
Yeah, I mean, plans are very much up in the air at the moment. I'm signed on for at least another year, and then we'll just sort of see after that.
Tim, thank you very much indeed.
You're most welcome.
That's Tim McDonald, and before him, Chris Edwards, who are both expats in Singapore. She's got a great online website called Honeycombers about what to see and do in Singapore.